This episode of the Rick Emerson Show is made possible by our good friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Galstaff, you have entered the door to the north. You are now by yourself, standing in a dark room. The pungent stench of mildew emanates from the wet dungeon walls.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
I cast a spell.
Where's the Mountain Dew?
In the fridge, duh.
I want to cast a spell.
Can I have a Mountain Dew?
Yes, you can have a Mountain Dew. Just go get it.
I can cast any of these, right? On the list?
Yes, any of the first level ones.
I'm going to get a soda. Anyone want one? Hey, Graham, I'm not in the room, right?
What room?
I want to cast Magic Missile.
The room where he's casting all these spells from.
He hasn't cast anything yet.
I am, though, if you'd listen. I'm casting Magic Missile.
Why are you casting Magic Missile? There's nothing to attack here.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Fine. You attack the darkness. There's an elf in front of you.
Whoa!
That's me, right?
He's wearing a brown tunic, and he has gray hair and blue eyes.
No, I don't. I have gray eyes.
Let me see that sheet.
Well, it says I have blue, but I decided I wanted gray eyes.
Whatever. Okay, you guys can talk to each other now if you want.
Hello. I am Galstaff, Sorcerer of Light.
Then how come you had to cast Magic Missile?
you guys are being attacked.
Do I see that happening?
No, you're outside by the tavern.
Cool, I get drunk.
There are seven ogres surrounding you.
How could they surround us? I had Mordenkainen's magical watchdog cast.
No, you didn't.
I'm getting drunk. Are there any girls there?
I totally did. You asked me if I wanted any equipment before this adventure, and I said no. But I need material components for all my spells, so I cast Mordenkainen's faithful watchdog.
But you never actually cast it.
Roll the dice to see if I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, you are.
Are there any girls there?
Yeah.
I did, though. I completely said when you asked me.
No, you didn't. You didn't actually say that you were casting the spell. So now there's ogres, okay?
Ogres? Man, I got an ogre slaying knife. It's got a +9 against ogres.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Okay, but if there's any girls there, I want to do them.
Hello. It is 29 minutes after the hour of 1, and this, the month of December in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming along, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet notably ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. My name is Rick Emerson. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for drawing near to be amused and entertained to some degree on this Tuesday, December 7th, 2010. And 10. It is December 7th, and welcome to day 12. It is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. If you were listening to last hour's Legion of News, as you should always do, from noon until 1 over Cascadia.fm, you heard Mr. Eric D. Snyder from Film.com, as well as Cinematical and Movie BS with Barrett Snyder, which is the show that airs Fridays, 11 a.m. at Cascadia.fm. You heard him filling in for Don Taylor. So Don Taylor is absent 2 days. So this is the thing. I'm not entirely sure if she mentioned this yesterday or not. It might have been the thing she said on the air, or she sort of alluded to it, or she mentioned it or something. But in any event, so her husband Patrick. See, now I just feel terrible. This is one of those things where I just feel like such a dick for snarking ever so slightly about the fact that he was looking a little peaked. He was looking a little pussy, frankly. And I think there was some fun made of that fact. In any event, so this morning I heard from Dawn that she's at the actually at the doctor's office with Patrick, and he's, I don't know, they're holding him down and they're prodding him or poking him or they're jabbing him with sticks or whatever it is they do to try to diagnose a, some sort of a pus overload. So Dawn is there, and we had Mr. Eric Snyder, who was in last hour for Legion of News. We are now, really, you're just, really, it's just me. That's the thing, is I am in this this studio, which now just seems massive and empty and cold and alone and cavernous, like a man walking a lonely road of faith out under the sun, under the gun, perpetually on the run, gonna set the night on fire. And all of this. So in any event, so I am here. It is a Tuesday. It is December 7th. We are live, and we're going to sort of going to go through today with a combination of things. So we've got, as we often say, some things from the archives. And here's the great thing about this: normally when people say that, it's just like random dreck. Normally people say, "I've got some stuff for the archives and some things from yesteryear." Normally, it's just crap. I mean, it's not even necessarily crap. It's just that it's like no better than luck of the draw. You know, it's just things. It's like the first thing that the intern was able to find when he rummaged around inside a big sack labeled like stuff we did one time. So we're gonna do something a little bit different than that. We've got I've actually handpicked a couple of segments, not just from this version of the show, but from the show as it has existed. Lo these many years, but mostly for the last, I don't know, last 4 or 5 years. We got some stuff that we'll play as we progress throughout the day. We'll get a couple of songs in there and so forth, and the phone lines are open if you would, if you'd just like to taunt me, or perhaps if you'd like to send well wishes to Patrick, or, you know, just whatever. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. This program in all of its many forms, even when we are sans Ms. Taylor, is brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. Is where you can find them. Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, directly across the Baghdad Theater, right next to Powell's Books. And we'll be talking about them more later on in the hour. This is where, you know, we normally do our sort of bits of business, talk about what is coming up. I will say, and I got this, so last hour, and I kind of walked through the morning, but last hour for Legion of News, it was Eric Snyder and I, and he did and by the way, I got to say, just first and foremost, before I do anything, did I have to give huge ups to Eric Snyder, who I think with like 9 minutes notice or something, because I think that Dawn, and I got to thank Dawn as well for doing this. Dawn really made a great judgment call about having Eric Snyder come in. He was fantastic, but I was actually at a business meeting this morning. I wasn't even really around. I was actually in glorious Milwaukee, and so I was there having a meeting in Milwaukee. And I got this text message from Dawn, and it was like, "Hey, by the way, I'm at the hospital with Patrick. I'm not going to be able to be in today." And I was, you know, immediately thinking like, "OMG, oh my God, what am I going to do?" And she had actually gone ahead and taken care of that end of things by talking to Eric Snyder, who came in. So he did a fantastic job. But he had to skedaddle back to the rest of his day. So sort of came in and, you know, played through that show. And as I said. As I said the words, you know, Dawn is not in today, along with her will be Eric Snyder. And I said, you know, coming up next time in the recovery store, we're going to get some things right out of the gate. It was like 5 seconds after I said that, I got this message from a guy. He just popped up a text message on the screen and it said, "Oh my God, can you play the Oregon Trail thing?" We will do that. So that might actually be the first thing we get to hear is we did our interview with Don Rawich, who is the creator of the Oregon Trail video game, which looms large in the public consciousness, especially in people, I would say, 45 years of age and younger, and especially in this part of the country, although I think it is a global phenomenon to some degree. So we got our interview with Dom Rawich, we got some musical stylings, and so forth. So that's all coming up. Don't forget, later on in the week, tomorrow we're going to talk, I should say this first and foremost, tomorrow, which is Wednesday the 8th, that is tomorrow, December 8th. We're going to have as our guest our good friend Mr. Todd the Corpse Workhoven, who has been a friend of the show for a long time and who has co-written a lot of things we've done. He's the co-writer of The Ebenezer I Barely Knew Her Christmas special, and he did some of the ghostwriting for the Emerson Roast happened a couple years ago. He's going to be in the studio tomorrow to talk about, he came into possession of, I don't even want to give it all away because it's going to talk about it tomorrow, but he came into possession of a stand-up arcade game. A stand-up, like an actual full-on wood-paneled, and it's not Polybius. to stand up a wood paneled arcade game. It's the game Miss Pac-Man. And so I think he's actually going to attempt to sell that like via this show. It's people helping people is what it is. And really, people taking money from other people and then exchanging it for goods and services. So that is going to be tomorrow. Thursday on the show, Anna Griffin's going to be here. And then Friday, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me. Comedy 101. Speaking of bits of business and Don being gone and trying to figure out what the, you know, how that's all playing out. It's a good time to note that next Monday, which I guess is what, the 13th? Next Monday, which is the 13th of December, I myself, Rick Emerson, I will not be here. I will be in glorious Provo, Utah. And I'm unclear at this point whether we're going to pre-tape something for next Monday, the 13th, whether I'm going to try to do the show remotely via Skype. Here's the thing is I could actually do it from the airport, I think, from the Salt Lake City airport, because my flight is going to land here late enough that I think I may be actually able to do the show from... I'm just thinking this out loud now. As I say these words, these are coming into my head and they're leaving my mouth all in one fluid motion, which is, you know, the sort of flawless, effortless excellence that I bring to everything. It is entirely possible. I'll have to look at the schedule, my itinerary, and plan this through. It is entirely possible that next Monday, the 13th, I could actually be on the phone broadcasting to Dawn or to the studio as I go through and have the backscatter thing or, you know, have my testes irradiated or whatever, you know, have the guy get his grope on, whatever it is they do. Guy put his hand in some sort of darkened area of my person. It's entirely possible that I might be able to do that live over the phone. Just, you know, like, FYI. So forth. By the way, we've got... the people weighing in, our listener Aaron in, he was not here, he's in Orange County. This is not Aaron Duran. Listener Aaron in Orange County says, if you would like to conduct an interview with me, I think I can set aside some time in the 1400 hour. That would be 2 p.m. Pacific. He asks, does Dawn's husband still have the same affliction he's had for the past few months, or is this a new malady? I don't really know that I have the answer to that, sir. You know, it's entirely possible that it's, I mean, who knows? He might be plagued. His immune system might be plagued with many, many hundreds of deficiencies and diseases at this point. I mean, you know, Don, if you're listening, that's just for comedic effect. I'm sure that it's just like a, you know, where he puts his feet up, takes a few aspirin, everything's, you know, the pus goes away. I mean, look, as Richie Bristol has shown, the pus is not, you know, look, pus isn't the impediment to a happy life that it used to be. You know, there was a time in this fading republic of ours, you got a lot of pus. Your life effectively over. Now, plus, just one more thing that you're working through. Somebody says Skype. It is true. So next Monday, the 13th, as I am coming back from Salt Lake City, from Provo, home of Eric Snyder, among other fine folks, I will be going through the airport, and I will try to... See, and I have the Skype application for my iPhone, so I may, in fact, be able to Skype from the airport as they are grabbing my junk. So forth. All right. And I'm just getting tons of messages. Everybody's offering themselves up for an interview. Okay, thank you. That's great. Says, I just hope it isn't contagious, Rick. You and me both, my friend. You and me both. Hey, by the way, just because you are listening live, everybody right now, if you're listening to the podcast, if you're listening to live, you're getting a little inside scoop. I guess if you're listening to this later on in the day, if you are hearing this show... I don't know, after 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. Pacific or something, the ship has already sailed. But if you are listening to this show live right now via the stream at 1:41 p.m. Pacific time here on Tuesday, December 7th, 2010, I'm going to give you a little heads up about something. So this is sort of, this has already leaked a little bit, as they say. This is already, the word of this is already sort of leached out a bit. I've seen it pop up in a few different places. Right now, if you're at a browser, you're on your smartphone, you're on your whatever, you want to go to this website, go to, just like it sounds, watchfordetails.com. It's all one word, just like it sounds, watchfordetails.com. Just go there right now. You see something that's, you see something that is, I think, perhaps moderately interesting or compelling. So there you go. That is watchfordetails.com. That's where you want to go. When you go there, you know, just like it says, it's a thing called, you know, watch for details. As should go without saying, there's going to be some things that perhaps require further elucidation, but that'll happen in the immediate future. You go there, you're going to see something that may tantalize you. It may not. It might leave you totally cold. You might be indifferent to it. It might make you hostile. But that's watchfordetails.com. All right, I have to just close this. All right, I have to close it because now I'm just getting nothing but text messages of people just sending me things about pus and pictures of infected pancreas. This text says, Rick, do you mean to tell me that of all the talented people in Portland, you couldn't find a person of color to co-host today? Are you telling me, Rick Emerson, that no person is better than a person of color? And then it says below that, lol, just teasing. And let's see, we'll read one more here. I'll get one more of these before I go to the next element, as they say. No, I've inadvertently closed it. Now I can't operate anything today. Maybe my immune system is failing me. It says, Rick, have you seen that Patrick is Don's husband. Patrick's pancreas is on Don's Facebook. And I have not seen that because I'm here offering my running commentary on life and the solo nature of today's program to the good people. So we'll do some updates here in just a short while. Here's what we're going to do. We have a variety of things set aside for today. Some interviews from the past. We got the musical breaks we're going to get to. I'll come back, pop in, we'll do a little news discussion, get some more comments from the text box. Again, if you do want to call, it's 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. If you'd like to be a part of today's program, telephonically speaking, depending on when you call, I may or may not be able to put you on because we're going to be doing some archival segments and so forth. But when we do our live segments today, if you want to call, it's 503-505-6964. Today's program brought to you by Sorrell's Vintages. Go to 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. And when I say go to 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, you got to do that because, you know, they don't have like a web page or anything, because the stuff that you, first of all, a web page wouldn't do justice to it. Secondly, the stuff that the inventory just changes too rapidly. Although you can actually go to Craigslist, and you go to Craigslist and you put in that address, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne, you're going to see selected items they put up there to be viewed. But it really is just an astoundingly beautiful selection of furniture, furnishings, housewares. When I say housewares, I don't mean like spatulas. I don't mean, you know, it's like an osterizer or something. Now, we were talking about, you know, just everything from small ashtrays to that cocktail set, which I rue the fact that I didn't just buy the thing when I was there. But as you get closer to Christmas, to the holiday season, I'm telling you, A, you want to get something good, and let's just be honest, we can just speak openly as men here. You want to get something good, but you also want to get something that looks like, you know, that is unique. You want to look like you get something that didn't just come off QVC. You know, or you didn't go to the Amazon, like, what's selling hot this week section or something. You want to get something that looks like it's one of a kind, or that you put a lot of thought into it. Now, maybe you have put a lot of thought into what you're going to get your loved one for this coming Yuletide season. Maybe you've labored over it. Maybe you've got some sort of an Excel spreadsheet put together. You're trying to figure out exactly what the perfect gift would be for the one who is closest to you. That's great. Good for you. That helps. It's not really necessary, though. You go to Sorrell's Vintages, I'm telling you, maybe you legitimately care enough to sit and ponder for quite some time what the person wants. You know, I guess it's good in and of itself. This is not really vital. You go there because you're going to find nothing but the best stuff at this place. It is the vintage furniture and furnishings, accessories, housewares from the mid-century modern era, which is the sort of atomic age, the Mad Men era. And it is everything, again, from full furniture down to the small pieces. And you go to the other side of the store where there's new things as well, out of stocking stuffer type items. You know, you get the things that are $25, things that are $5. And you tell Daniel, you heard it right here in the Rick Emerson Show on the Emerson News Network. He is a guy who really has, you know, he's kind of put his bucks on the line advertising here, helping us out. And we're sending you there because it's a great place. And I wouldn't say that if it was not so, my friends. So it is Sorrell's Vintages, 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. That is 3713 Southeast Hawthorne. Now I'm just fascinated by the idea that Patrick's pancreas may be on Facebook. So before we start this, let me just hold on a second. Let me just, I got to check this out right now. Let's see. Don Taylor. There appears to be no actual picture of the pancreas itself. There is, however, I could be wrong about this. No. There is what appears to be a CAT scan or a CT scan of Don's husband's Patrick's pancreas. which is a phrase I never really thought I would use. Feel free to use that, by the way, as like some sort of a like a missile launch code or something, or the first strike verification series. So Don's husband, Patrick's pancreas, I don't even know if that's correct anymore. That you can see that, by the way, if you go to Don's Facebook page. You just go to Facebook, and it's Don Taylor, D-A-W-N-T-A-Y-L-O-R. You can see the pancreas belonging to Don's husband, Patrick. All right, well, without further ado, it is the Rick Emerson Show. It's Tuesday, December 7th, 2010, and somebody did request this right out of the gate, so we're going to do it before we get to anything else. This was, I think, maybe in May of 2009 is when we taped this. This is an interview with Mr. Don Rawich, and you may or may not know who Don Rawich is, but you certainly know his creation. He is the man behind the Oregon Trail video game, which is a huge part of my childhood and the popular culture as it exists for nerds, for computer folk, and for anybody who was a school child anytime in the 80s or afterward, especially in the Northwest. So this is an interview we conducted with Mr. Don Rawich. He is the creator of the Oregon Trail video game, and is right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is a real honor to welcome to the Rick Emerson Show a man you may not know his name initially, but you certainly know, you may not know his name, but you know his game. He is Don Rawich, and he is one of the creators of the seminal video game Oregon Trail. Hello, sir. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Rick?
I am fantastic, my friend. And I just to give you a little bit of a backstory on why we're having this conversation. When I'm not here doing the radio show, I do this this TV show on the weekends, and I was off at the TV studio, we were filming, and we were in a break. We were in a commercial break, and I forget how the subject even came up. We were interviewing somebody, and the guy was from New York City, and he had mentioned video games somehow. And I said to him, because this is a sort of a thing that I kind of wonder about off and on, I asked him, I said, "Hey, you know, we're about the same age. You went to school in New York City. Did you ever play a video game called Oregon Trail?" And the guy said, "I totally played Oregon Trail." And somebody else who was in the room said, "Hey, I played that too, and I'm from Florida." And then somebody else said, "I played it too, and I grew up in Minnesota or something." Everybody in the room was from a different state, different parts of the country. Everybody had played the Oregon Trail video game, and then everybody immediately made a "you died of dysentery" joke. So all that having been said, did you know that this game was still so popular and so widely known, or did that kind of catch you by surprise? Because you obviously had, you know, you've gone on and done many other things with your life. Did you know that this was out there kind of becoming a cult phenomenon?
Well, it certainly was popular during the 80s and into the 90s, especially in the education market, which is what we originally designed it for. But I wasn't really aware of how the popularity had hung on until my son, a couple of years ago, who was in college, told me to I needed to check out Facebook because there were Oregon Trail groups and campuses all over the country.
That is so awesome. Tell me a little bit about how the game came to be. I know you and some other guys put it together, and then the rest is history. But what is the genesis of the game?
Okay, well, it started, people may not realize, 38 years ago, back in the fall of 1971. I was going to college at Carleton College in Minnesota, and had two friends, Paul Dillenberger and Bill Heineman, and the three of us were doing our student teaching that fall to prepare for getting teaching certification. We were teaching in the Minneapolis Public Schools, which was a district that was one of the pioneers in the use of computers in classrooms. And Paul and Bill knew a little bit about computer programming, and I was teaching kids about the westward movement in junior high history. And it just kind of came to us, maybe there was something we could do on the computer that would help me out in my history class. So one weekend, they lugged home the large teletype machine, which is how you access computers back then, and we kind of knocked the thing together.
How long did it take to create the game, front to back, and to have a working version of the game before you sort of did the polishing on it? How long did it take to create Oregon Trail?
Probably about a week.
And did you have any notion at that point that it was going to be, I mean, did you make this to sell commercially, or was it going to be strictly a thing that was going to be given for educational purposes? What was your goal with the game?
Well, back then, before personal computers, there wasn't really a consumer market for software applications like games. So We did it for use in schools, and then after we were done practice teaching, it kind of sat on the shelf, so to speak, for a couple of years until in 1974 I went to work for an organization called the Minnesota Educational Computing Consortium, which is a mouthful. Acronym is MEC, and MEC was set up in Minnesota to help schools get the best use out of computers, and it kind of went from there.
And actually, this is a perfect confluence with sort of my own life and how I came to play Oregon Trail. We're talking with Don Rawich, who's one of the creators and developers of the game. I remember sitting in, we had this sort of activity center we would go to at my school, and we had, I believe it was an Apple IIc was the computer, and I could be wrong about that, but it was had the sort of monochromatic, it was the green on black screen.
Right.
And Oregon Trail, there were two versions, actually. We had two computers right next to each other. And I think they must have been two different generations of the game, because one, you would hunt by typing the word pow or bam or something. And then the other one, you actually would press the space bar as the deer or whatever was kind of sprinting by, and you try to hit it with this burst of dots that I guess was supposed to be the gun. Am I remembering that correctly, that there were different ways to do that?
Yeah, you're correct. Since the original version predated personal computers, it was delivered via a mainframe which could only output text. So what you were seeing on the one screen was a kind of an Apple version of that original mainframe computer game. When I got to MEC and we started working with personal computers like the Apple, then we had programmers that could create the graphics and animation needed to do the hunting that you saw.
And I think one of the reasons why Oregon Trail just had such a huge impact and why so many people know it, obviously the game is a lot of fun to play, and it's also, and plus the other thing is you could also say, no, I'm not playing a video game, I'm learning, because it was one of the only video games, and in fact, to my memory, the only video game that we were allowed to play at school, because everything else was sort of like you were goofing off. But if you're playing Oregon Trail, especially growing up in the Northwest, as I did, you know, it was considered, I mean, you were sort of, you were boning up on the history of the region. So everybody seizes on the you died of dysentery thing for some reason. And I think maybe it's because it's just linguistically, it's kind of a funny sounding word or whatever. But is it at all possible for you from memory? Can you tell me all the ways to die in Oregon Trail because I know I think your oxen or something can die
too.
My
oxen always drown.
Really? Is that true? Trying to cross a river?
Yes, me and my oxen.
So,
well, there are a number of ways to die, but let me just say this. One of the things I did early on was to go and find in the library copies of diaries of people that actually traveled the trail. I went through the diaries, and I kind of kept score of how many times certain things happened to people, and then went into the computer program and set the probabilities according to the information from the diaries. So when you did die, at least as the game progressed in its development, you were dying of things or running into problems roughly in the same probability that a real pioneer would have.
That is so awesome. I guess I should not be surprised by that there is, to whatever degree was possible with the computer programming at that time, that the game is historically accurate. That is amazing. So there's drowning. I remember three. I remember dysentery. I remember drowning, and then I think you could get a broken leg
or
something.
You could starve too.
Starve. Yeah. That's right.
Well, if you didn't keep your food supply up, you could starve. If you didn't get through the mountains in the Rockies and Cascades before the spring weather came, you could freeze to death, like the Donner Party.
We're talking to Don Rawich. He's one of the creators of the game Oregon Trail. Sarah, my producer Sarah, has a friend of hers. Your friend Kelsey claims that there is a secret code or a secret something where you can put in.
Well, maybe it wasn't a code, but maybe it was like she had all the numbers down correctly. She said that she knew how to beat the game. Like, is the game possible to be beaten?
Well, you can succeed at the game, but are there no Easter eggs or hidden codes or anything in the original version? Are there?
No, not really. And that there's so many different probabilities that work simultaneously that it probably never plays exactly the same twice. But one thing I noticed when we took it into classrooms or did teacher workshops, when people first played the game, about half of them died along the way. And then as they played it another time and another time, of course, they got smarter about it and their their survival probability went up. Well, that's just what happened to the pioneers. The first pioneers that traveled the trail in the 1840s, about half of them died along the way. The ones who survived and made it to Oregon then wrote back to the east and said, here's what you need to do. Here are the supplies you need. Here's when you need to hunt and the weather and so forth. And then the trip became safer.
I know that with Oregon Trail, you can do it from the iPhone, the iPod Touch, it's at the iPhone store. There's the Facebook version. Is the game sort of out there now with a life of its own? Do they consult you guys or ask you or build on the original game in some way for these new versions, or is it sort of from the ground up?
Well, the game has gone through, I'd say, 8 to 10 improvements over time, and most of those were done through the organization I mentioned, MEC. Didn't necessarily involve myself, but other people who had technical and historical skills and knowledge. Today, the rights are owned by a company called River Deep, and they do sell it on their website. It's probably not, you know, in the top 10 anymore, so to speak, but you can still buy a copy.
What are you up to now? I know your life has taken you in a lot of different places since Oregon Trail was created. Where are you at right now with your life? What are you doing?
Well, most of my career was spent in the educational technology field. I'm currently an independent consultant that works with companies, most of whom are in the technology business one way or the other, to help them improve their businesses.
And final question I have to ask you, have you ever seen in person or have you seen for sale online those shirts that just say you died of dysentery, the Oregon Trail shirt?
I'll tell you, I'm wearing one right now because the guys that created that found me and sent me one for free.
That is fantastic. Well, Don Rawich, I have to say, although it is many, many years removed, thank you for making my school experience just a little bit more enjoyable and for, as cheesy as this might sound, for really making education, for one brief shining moment when I was in front of that computer monitor, making it entertaining. So thank you for that, my friend.
Glad to hear that.
All right. Best of continued success in all things, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there you are. That's Don Rawich, ladies and gentlemen, one of the creators of the video game Oregon Trail. That was
awesome. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Are Hydrox cookies really cheap imitation Oreos?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Dawn Taylor. Let's recall for a moment the halcyon days of childhood. Mom offers you a cookie. Hooray, you say. You see her pull out a package of what looked to be Oreos. Even better. But a moment later, you realize that you've been bamboozled. Those aren't Oreos she's holding. Oh, no. Those are Hydrox cookies, generally considered to be the less tasty, bastard knockoff spawn of the far superior Oreo. The Oreo cookie was first produced by Nabisco in 1912 at its Chelsea factory in New York City. It was designed for British biscuit eaters. Yes, they call cookies biscuits. And the Nabisco folks thought that British cookies were boring. The first Oreo was mound-shaped and available in two flavors, lemon meringue and cream. A second Oreo design was introduced in 1916, and as the cream filling was by far the more popular, Nabisco dumped the lemon meringue flavor in the 1920s. What we now know as the Oreo, imprinted with the Nabisco logo, first hit shelves in 1952. So the Hydrox, that Johnny-come-lately wannabe Oreo, that must have come after that, right? Well, no. Sunshine's Hydrox cookie actually predates the Oreo by 4 years. It was invented in 1908. They were discontinued in 1999 because, let's face it, everyone likes Oreos better. Oh, and despite what we've all grown up believing, there's no lard in the Oreo filling. Not anymore, anyway. They stopped using pork fat in Oreos some time ago. Yet they're still delicious.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority. From the Emerson News Network.
on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose. Yuletide carols being sung by a choir. And folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny little tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep. On his way, he's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. So I'm offering this simple phrase. Two kids from 1 to 92. Though it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.
It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. This is strangely downbeat. I thought this was a much more up-tempo song. It is the Rick Emerson radio program here at the Emerson News Network. It is Tuesday, December 7th, 2010. Thank you for coming along. And vinyl crackle to boot. All right, then. The musical accompaniment of Mr. Bob Ralston there. This is a live show, you know, more or less. I mean, you know, it's live. It's such a relative statement that, because you know, if you're listening to this later, I don't even know if you call it a live show or if you call it a live to tape. The point is that we are here, and by we I mean you and I. And Dawn Taylor is absent today. She's at the emergency room with her husband Pat, who's gone all yellow, and not in the figurative coward of the county kind of way. I mean, like actual like. Yellow, you know, like that yellow bastard yellow. You Sin City, Frank Miller yellow. In any event, so we conducted Legion of News earlier today with Mr. Eric D. Snyder sitting in. Today, the Rick Emerson Show is just you and me, my friends, and a selection of things from the archives, and this is good, actually. I think this is actually the first time we have done a sort of, the best of show or an archive show or whatever since... I mean, I know it's the first time we've done it since we started this iteration of the program, but it's the first time that we've done it since we instituted, you know, since we have this sort of live texting thing going on. And I guess, you know, we always had phones and, you know, then email and stuff, but... So we were sort of getting, the live feedback to the fact that we were doing the Don Rawich interview, and now people are requesting, you know, interviews from...
interviewing their, requesting their own favorite interviews from years past. So we're going to roll some of those things out. I'm going to take a moment to tell you that today's program is brought to you by Christmas Mountain Trees. You just heard Mel Torme there, sort of a chopped up version of Mel Torme's Christmas song. Christmas Mountain Trees helps to make the Rick Emerson Show possible each and every day. You can find out more about them by going to their website at ChristmasMountainTrees.com. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And it is a fantastic family farm. And it's, when I say a family farm, you know, sometimes you think a family farm, first of all, you know, it's like so many businesses try to, you know, they market themselves or they position themselves as being, you know, from our family to yours. And by their family, either they mean like the family of Dow Chemical or something, you know, or they're like, you know, Megagalacorp or something. But really, this family farm, it is just that. It is a guy named Troy and his wife Jennifer and their brother-in-law Kevin and presumably children who work for free. So, you know, because that's what they're for. And they have had this farm for decades now. I mean, the grandfather started the business in the 40s, and now they've, you know, they turned it into a farm. You can go up there, and you can actually you go and pick out your own tree from the Christmas tree. And it just sounds magical, right? I mean, can I we just say that? When you say, I mean, I know that they named the mountain, so it's not like it was called this by pioneers or something, but Christmas Mountain Trees, I mean, just the place called Christmas Mountain is fantastic. I mean, it just sounds exceptional. And, you know, when you go up there and you just pick your own tree out of the Christmas tree forest, you know, just an entire farm of Christmas trees, it just sounds fantastic. And it is fantastic. It is wonderful. And I got to tell you this. I didn't get a chance to post these photos because, you know, the illness and the jaundice and the pus and the whatever. But I got to tell you, Laura and I put up our decorations last night. We put up our tree. I mean, I guess the tree had been put up on Saturday when we got it, but last night we decorated. You know, we got out the tinsel and the garland and the whatever. And I don't want to tell the whole thing today because then I don't have a chance to talk about it tomorrow. I'll have to method act like I didn't already tell the story once, and that never works out for me. And whatever. But we decorated the tree last night, and it is hands down, no fooling. You know, I'm not just saying this. It is hands down the best tree we have ever had. I mean, it's gorgeous. It is just, it's so great. I mean, it's huge and green and has the great scent and it's perfect. You know, and people think that you just put the seeds in the ground and the tree grows and it looks like that. You know, those trees have got to be trimmed and maintained. They got to deal with every tree multiple times throughout the years. And they got 175 miles of trees. Can I just tell you that? That's just like if you were to weave in and out of all the places that the road goes when you're at Christmas Mountain Trees, 175 miles. Nothing to sneeze at, my friends. It is the best tree we have ever had, ever, ever, ever. And the one in the office here at the break room, it looks fantastic as well. So you really, man, I'm telling you, you are not going to regret this. You go there, you know, maybe this weekend. You know, they're open until December 19th. You can go to ChristmasMountainTrees.com, ChristmasMountainTrees.com. Find out more about their hours. You get the directions. You can get weather reports and all that. You are not going to regret this. If you take your kids there, you go there with your family, it's a fantastic time. You get a wagon ride through all of the different sections of the farm. You have the mug of cider with you. You pick out the tree. And then when you get to the back to the bottom of the hill, the tree's there. They bale it up with a single line of twine. And you get it in your house. You pull the twine off. Bam. Tree expands. And it's, you know, it's right there. It's good to go. It's beautiful. So I'm telling you, man, I would not steer you wrong in this. ChristmasMountainTrees.com. It is ChristmasMountainTrees.com. And do tell me you heard it here, won't you please? That would be that'd be awesome. That'd be fantastic. Let's see. Somebody says here in the text box, God, why do I look at these things? It's just every time I look at the text box, it's just something horrible. And I don't mean, no offense. I mean, it's not like saying it's like it's you guys or anything. I'm just saying it's just there's always something bad here. This says, it's an appropriate sting. This says, Rick, did you see Richie Bristol's latest Facebook photo? The answer, by the way, is always no. The answer to that is always no. Did you see Richie Bristol's latest Facebook photo? I swear to God, this is new, that you're not listening to, you know, we are doing some clips of it. It's a clip show to some degree. This is not old. This is from Tuesday, December 7th, 2010. This message says, from 1:41 it was sent today, December 7th, 2010. Did you see Richie Bristol's Facebook photo? Last night he posted a picture of himself, all caps, entirely naked, except for a tiny pair of pink ladies' panties. No, I didn't see, but I'd like to thank you for putting that image in my head. Thanks so much. I appreciate that. You're a real pal. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Straight ahead today, we've got some more segments from the archives, from the vault, as they say. And if you've got the... I can't even believe that these words are leaving my mouth. I never thought I would say this again. This guy says, are you going to play the interview with the guy who used to play Steal the Bacon with John Wayne Gacy? Well, here's the thing about that. Rick, this is our good friend Rick, a listener who asked if we're going to be playing the interview with John Wayne Gacy's childhood pal. And what a great phrase that is, worth your 32 cents alone. This is an unintended sort of clip show today because, again, Dawn is in the ER with her husband Patrick, who's gone all yellow, and so they're trying to figure out exactly, you know, like what's up with the yellow guy. So this is an unintended clip show that we're doing here. I am actually going to be absent next Monday the 13th, and I see somebody calling, so we'll get the phone call here in just a second. If you're on hold, hang on. We'll get your call in just a moment. I'm going to be absent next Monday the 13th, and we're going to be doing a best of that day as well. So I got to leave something. You know, I can't give it all away now, sir, because then there'll be nothing for next time. But I can't even believe that these words are leaving my mouth right here when I was actually about to say. So if you've got a request, because you know I'm right here, the archive is right here, and there's that, you know, that thing. What do you call it? It's the phone. That we've got here. So, you know, you could actually be calling now, if that's your pleasure. Speaking of which, let's see who this is. Hello, sir, madam, as the case may be. Who am I speaking with?
Hey, Rick, it's Jenny.
Hello, Jenny, how are you?
What up?
Well, Patrick's apparently filled with pus, and so I'm here playing Bob Ralston songs and talking to somebody over the text box about John Wayne Gacy. How's your day?
Well, hey, I wanted to call and give you breaking news.
Yes.
It's kind of sad breaking news, though. Did you read this on the internet?
Oh, God. Is it a snuff watch?
Yeah.
All right. Hold on a second. Hold on. I wasn't prepared. I didn't even open the thing that has all of the the sound bites. How, let me ask you this while I'm getting the...
I'll try and step in and do my best while Don's away.
Thank you. While I'm getting the sound bite... while I'm getting the sound bite ready here, let me ask you this. On the classic 1 to 10 scale, how sad is this going to make me?
Well, probably not you, but because you're kind of cold and bitter. But
okay, but let's say I had feelings.
Yeah, it would be a sad thing, I think.
It, like a 7 or like an 8 on the 10 scale, you think?
I don't know. To me, it's like a 7.
All right, hold on a second.
So, no, you know what? To me, it's like a 6.
All right.
I'm going to round down.
By the way, I don't even know who it is yet, but I got to tell you, I hope that their family is listening so they can hear you rounding down.
I know. And you know what? A lot of people are going to think I'm really a horrible person.
You know, because you're just...
Oh, well.
Going, well, I guess it's not that. Well, you know, to hell with him. All right, hold on a second. Let me just intro this here. Hold on a second. Let me just pot down the Bob Ralston. Let me just do this. Play the...
I can hear it. This is why you need an intern, you know.
I know. It's... I'll put that on the list right after antibiotics and a health plan. All right. Here is your snuff watch, your ad hoc breaking news snuff watch, and I'll roll the breaking news center. Okay, so joining us now, God, I love technology. So joining us now via the phone with some breaking news, a breaking snuff watch here on this live program, a clip show, but live nonetheless, December 7th, 2010, is our good friend and listener, Jenny, with a snuff watch. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like I should do a little guessing here where I try to figure out who it is, or... Is it one of those things where...
I like when you do that.
Now, but is it one of those things where if I try to guess who it is, that I'm going to feel like a dick because when I find out, because I will have turned their death into a game?
I don't think so.
All right,
I gave the person a stick, so how bad can it be, right?
Oh, that's true. Okay, so let me try to guess. Male or female?
Female.
Male, okay, female. Actress?
No.
Let's see, male or female, to the best of your knowledge, over or under the age of 40?
Over.
Over. Not an actress, female, over the age of 40. From the United States?
Yes.
An entertainer or performer?
No.
No. Madeleine Albright?
Oh, no, but that would be a sad one.
Well,
I might give that one more than a 6, actually.
I have
just... Because she's kind of a character.
I don't know why. It just leapt into my head. Okay, let me see. I got, like, 2 more guesses here. A politician?
Not exactly.
Not exactly. Elizabeth Edwards. Elizabeth Edwards. Oh, I should have...
Yeah.
I'm so horrified. I should have... Well, A, because I should have guessed that because we were just talking about her. And then this, you know, this is, I caused this by calling her a horrible person last hour. now, to be fair, It wasn't me. I myself, I'm not the one that actually called her a horrible person. I just said, I noted that that people around the Edwards campaign, speaking on condition of anonymity, had referred to her as not being a very likable person, to being something of a C, actually. So I feel like I caused this by then just not even trampling on her grave. It was like trampling on the hole in the ground.
Shoving her into the hole.
Yeah, seriously. I'm digging the grave and then pushing her in and then stomping on it. I feel terrible. All right. So this just happened. So this just came over the wire?
Yeah, CNN just says, I like this. Elizabeth Edwards, the estranged wife of former North Carolina senator and presidential candidate John Edwards, died Tuesday. After a lengthy battle with breast cancer, she was 61.
Now, I wonder if Edwards is going to do the obligatory, if he will do the obligatory press conference where he attempts to remind everybody that he at once upon a time was not just known as the guy who was sticking it to Ryle Hunter and rummaging through baby diapers looking for DNA.
Well, did I hear something? I don't know if it was you guys or elsewhere this morning, maybe on the news, that they were saying that, like last year, you know how everybody kind of does like that one last trip, you know,
right,
with the family,
right,
and all of this. They always seem to do. And I guess they all went to Japan because she was had spent some time in Japan as a child, or I don't even remember that part. But he went with them. John Edwards went with her and the children to Japan.
I would imagine that if nothing else, she required him to pay for everything she did for the remainder of her life. I mean, that's it. Like, you know, even if she didn't want to be around him, it's like, baby, I'm not paying for anything. You take out the plastic, you know, because that's the at the very least, at the bare minimum, he can just be around to foot the bill. Wow. Okay. Well, so I should have anticipated that. So thank you for calling in and letting me know that. That is a thing that would have been entirely off my radar, because I'm just because I'm busy looking for more audio from like the Oregon Trail guy and whatever. So excellent. All right. Thank
totally.
You, Jenny. I appreciate it. There you go.
You betcha. All right. Hey, good luck today.
Thank you. There you go. That's listener Jenny, ladies.
Okay.
And
bye.
Gentlemen. Bye. There you go. As we continue this clip show. I'm a terrible person. I honestly feel... Now, see, now the music just sounds morbid. Doesn't it? Now the music just sounds like it's... Yeah. You know what this now sounds like? What with the poll now that has been put over the show by the death of Elizabeth Edwards? This now sounds like the music that plays when you go to pick out a casket for a loved one. You know, and it's like you go in and they go, would you care for pine or something in a faux marble, sir? All right, well, in any event, sorry about that. By the way, somebody's saying, Elizabeth Edwards dead. By the way, Tim Riley beat you to that breaking news. Boom goes Riley's dynamite. All right, awesome. So forth. Oh, by the way, incidentally, everybody is in the text box saying that they beat me to the Elizabeth Edwards thing. All right, well, I'm doing the best I can. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. I think I was done. I'm asking the room. There's no one here. I was going to ask if I was done with the Christmas Mountain thing. Let's say that I was. All right. You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. So to get back to where we were, so I'm going to be actually absent next Monday, the 13th. I'll be traveling back from Utah. And so as a result, we're going to hold some of those interviews back until next week because we're already assembling the clip show for next Monday. And again, I may be able to be on for part of that. It's like I might be able to actually Skype in from the airport, just so you can hear my privacy and perhaps my genitals being violated, you know, by some $4.50 an hour guy with a gun. So that's coming up next Monday. Today is a little bit of an ad hoc best of day because Dawn is at the ER with her husband Patrick. So now people are requesting various interviews. They're requesting the things from the archives via the text box. We'll try to get to as many of those as possible. Here's another one. So somebody actually just requested this, and I would be no man of the people if I didn't play this. Somebody says, hey, in honor of the Sons of Anarchy season finale, and then he puts, which was freaking awesome, by the way, can you play the interview with Kenny Johnson, alias Lem, alias Kozik from SOA? I can indeed. So it was just actually a few months ago when we conducted an interview with Kenny Johnson, who you may remember as Curtis Lem Lemansky from The Shield, and he was also Kozik on this season's episodes of Sons of Anarchy, and he, I think, was at the end of season two. and that was kind of threaded throughout season three. And from the story arc, from the way they're drawing it out with him and Tig, who is one of the other members of the club, seems like he's going to be back for season four. And I think he's from... They claimed at one point he was from Oregon, but then it's like his cut, you know, his, like, you know, vest or whatever when he's, you know, on the show, it says Tacoma. So I don't know what that's all about. I have conjured that up, sir. And it looks like it just says Meebo guest, like, 5325. So I'm not sure what your name is. But, sir, this is for you. Here on the Rick Emerson radio program for Tuesday, December 7th, 2010, this is our interview with Mr. Kenny Johnson from The Shield and Sons of Anarchy right here on the Rick Emerson Show.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Guest has appeared on TV series such as Smallville, Saving Grace, and Cold Case, and on the first five seasons of The Shield, playing Detective Curtis Lemansky. He can currently be seen on the original series Sons of Anarchy, which airs Tuesdays on FX, and which you really ought to be watching. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, Mr. Kenny Johnson. Hello, sir. How are you today?
Good, man. I'm doing great. How are you, Rick?
I am fantastic. We're here alongside Don Taylor, who is my co-host, and who, I have to say, did a little giddy dance when I told her that we were going to be having this interview, because she actually just finished, I believe, last night watching The Shield, and so she saw your character from the very beginning all the way through to the end of season five, and then the ramifications beyond. So she was very excited.
I was. He told me I couldn't keep just going "Lem" over and over again, because that made me seem kind of pathetic, and it might embarrass me in front of you.
No, that's all right.
I have to ask you, your character in Sons of Anarchy got a real brief introduction in season two. I think it was the episode where they were sort of fortifying the clubhouse, and now reappears at the top of season three. Without giving too much away, because the series is just getting underway, what can you tell us about him as a character?
He was an ex-Marine. He was sergeant-in-arms, or he is sergeant-in-arms up in the Tacoma SOA. And, you know, he had a past with Tig, and they used to be really close. We used to run together when they were back up there, and we're in the club together back up there. So that's kind of their history, and something happened that kind of separated them. And, my character kind of wants out into, a vision of what he wanted to be a part of, which is kind of a smaller family, which is more like the Charming SOA. And, figures, you know, that, and with Tig, that maybe he can mend whatever differences they had in the past. So he comes down there. You know, they kind of ask him to come down there because they need some muscle, but then when he wants to get in, obviously, that's a big issue for Tig. And so a lot of this season is going to be he and I going at each other.
Well, and Tig is sort of he's a little bit of a chaos factor in terms of characters, too, because you never quite get the sense from moment to moment whether he's about to do something really generous and noble or whether he's about to, like, take out a guy's eye with an ice cream scoop or something.
Bite his nose off, yeah. genitals off, nose.
presuming that you haven't actually, like, been a gang member at any point in your life, how do you prepare to play somebody like that?
Oh, well, no, I was in a gang when I was younger, you know, so I kind of relate. No, I'm kidding. It's so funny because I did so much research on The Shield with, on gangs and the 18th Streeters and the Lost Mags and everything. And I spent a lot of time, talking to gangbangers and ex-gangbangers. And then I've watched a million specials on gangs, you know, and people in prison that were in gangs. And there's something about it for them that is very family oriented, and it makes them feel like they have a home. And a lot of, you know, people that are like misfits or whatever, they go to a place where they feel they can relate and they have family, and it doesn't have to be their blood family, but people that are like brothers to them. And you know, the Marines do it where they watch each other's backs, the cops do it. And, you know, in the same respect, I think gang members do it, or motorcycle gangs, you know. I've spent a bit of time with a guy who's a Hell's Angel, and he treats me like we're best friends and we're brothers. And he consistently does that. And I never really understand why, because I know him, but I don't know him. But at the same time, it's like that's the kind of brotherhood that they have, you know. And so, you know, they kind of look at it more like, you know, you're my brother than like a gang, you know. So I kind of just kind of, you know, try to parallel the same feelings.
I read in an interview that when you first started on Sons of Anarchy, basically your first few days, the first couple of episodes, really, you just sort of stood around in the background and were just kind of there and weren't quite sure what it was your character was going to be doing in the future, but also that you like to do a lot of research for characters, and you spend a lot of time doing your own backstory. So how do you prepare for a character when you yourself don't actually know where the showrunners are going to be taking him?
I just make it up, and whether it matches, it doesn't match. You always think that as long as there's something going on, like a movie in my mind about my whole past and where I am and what relation everyone is here to me, it fills my life. And until I have no more information from the writers, I kind of just go with that. And sometimes, it might not be spot on for what the writers are thinking, but it makes it more interesting because it doesn't always have to match exactly, the situation.
That actually dovetails with something I wanted to ask, which is, I won't spoil anything, but it's become clear that Sons of Anarchy is one of those shows where no one is really safe. When you're on a show like that, how much advance warning does someone have that their character is going to get killed off?
I don't know.
As someone who has had that experience yourself.
I mean, is that...
Yeah. Thanks for reminding me, man. If they repeat that real quick, I'm going to be pretty pissed off. But,
well, I'm not trying to imply that I know anything you don't know. I'm just... I always wonder if that's a... If that's a thing where you're just kind of sitting around the, you know, craft services, and then a guy comes by and goes, "Hey, man, have you seen page 49? I don't know. You fall into a blender, you know, or whatever."
Yeah, I mean, I can say that. I think it's different for every show, and it all depends on maybe the situation with, I don't know. I mean, again, the Shield, I knew like about 4 months in advance or something like that. But I think on this show, from my understanding, is it could happen really quick. That's my understanding, what I've kind of like watched. So, you're right. Everyone's walking around like, I don't know if I'll be back. You know, who knows? Yeah.
I have to tell you, and maybe this will or will not surprise you, the number of guys I know, the number of men who took Lem's death on the Shield really, really hard was just, it was really amazing. Did you get that reaction from people as well, that they were really stunned by it?
Yeah. And it really, one of the first people that gets me emotional thinking about it, but Michael Chiklis' dad is he's a hardcore Bostonian, and that guy doesn't usually cry. And he's a tough, tough, tough guy. And he called Michael up when he saw that episode, and he just was like going, "Why?" Like, he was so upset. He's like, "Why him? Why can't he? Why? What the F is wrong with those writers?" He goes, "Oh, my God." And he was so devastated that Michael got almost and started crying because he says, "I've never seen my dad react like that." And then I talked to somebody else who was one of the hosts from Chicago. And I calls from radio stations that next morning. And I just didn't return any calls for like a day. And then when I talked to them, the guy said, "I was so shocked that I turned off all the lights in my house when I stood there in the dark." And he goes, "I felt like it was weird." I mean, the way it affected different people, you know, it affected me, you know, because you never know how people follow your character and how it's going to affect them. But I know that was Sean's intention, that he was hoping that killing the conscience of these guys would affect people. And I guess it did that, you know.
Speaking of people following your character, if I'm correct, and I might have this wrong, but it's my understanding that Saving Grace was canceled, and Saving Grace was terrific. Saving Grace was canceled not because of ratings. TNT actually wanted to renew it, but because Fox thought it was too expensive. And I was wondering, how does that feel for you as an actor to know you actually have the numbers, you have people watching you, but, you know, it's a business decision?
Yeah, I've seen it happen before, as well as, you know, other friends of mine. I was on a show in 2000 that did really well in the ratings, and they had a new president come in and took off all the new shows that the prior people had put on the air. And they were doing really good in the ratings, but, you know, sometimes they like to just start, you know, all new stuff. So, I've experienced it to that degree. And then this one, you know, basically, you know, that's what Fox said, but I know they were going to pick it up and go year to year. And I think, or somebody wanted to go year to year and somebody wanted to do a two-year pickup. So basically they kind of argued about, you know, one said, I just want to go year to year. The other one says, I want to do 2 years because we want to guarantee syndication, because it was at the fourth and fifth season, which would have been, they would have been guaranteed syndication, which they would have made a lot of their money back. And I think they just got nervous. And when the other one wouldn't do it, they just, they kind of basically for about a month and a half, they butted heads and then canceled it.
That must be really frustrating for you, though, you know, being on the artistic end, just waiting for your fate to be decided by the suits.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's the nature of the business. And you know, unfortunately, you can't get emotionally invested in that part of it, because there's absolutely nothing you can do. And if you just walk away angry or upset, you know what I mean? It just is a waste of your energy. You just have to see, like, that's just another decision that maybe you don't agree with, and it's too bad. But at that point, you know, there's absolutely nothing you can do, you know? And so, you know, I tried to just, you know, Holly and I talked about it, and we're just like, oh, well, you know, I mean, that was it. I mean, we put a lot into it, and that was a very emotionally, you know, challenging show. And, I mean, it goes both ways. It's too bad, but at the same time, we're lucky that we went that far and got to do what we did and say what we said, you know?
We're talking to Mr. Kenny Johnson. You can see him on Sons of Anarchy, which airs on FX. When you're working on shows like these, Sons of Anarchy really is just quite an exceptional program. Does it make it hard to work on other projects, in the sense that it's a good problem to have, I suppose, but do you find yourself comparing everything else you audition for, everything else you read for, to, you know, this great work that you're doing on Sons of Anarchy, or the work you've done on The Shield?
Well, you know, for me, like, The Shield was great writing. I mean, awesome characters and incredible writing. And after I left The Shield, I probably took, you know, there were like 35 projects people wanted me to come in for. And I think I only would come in for three of them, just because the writing to me, if it wasn't going to be as good, or equal or as good, I just didn't want to, you know, you can't really do that for yourself or your career, I feel. So I kind of held out for something that I felt was worthy, you know, for as an actor. And so, you know, I thought the pilot of Saving Grace was really great, which I wanted to do that. But when I left that and I got a call from Kurt and from John Landgraf, saying that they might, you know, use me over on Sons of Anarchy, I got excited, because Kurt was one of the Shield writers, and I know he's a great writer, and I'd seen the first season of Sons of Anarchy, and I loved it. I loved the writing. I loved what the whole concept was, and I totally dug the relationship. So I was lucky enough to go, you know, kind of right into Kurt's show. And again, the writing's great. His writing is so, so good. And it's kind of familiar to me, because it feels a bit, you know, not like The Shield, but there's a familiar, you know, it's familiar. And it's great. It's real. It's very real to me. And, you know, so I love it because of that fact.
You also got to do one episode of Lie to Me, because Sean Ryan is the showrunner over at Lie to Me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you have overlapping work days with some of your other colleagues? Because you played, I'm assuming just a few days work. You played a small role as a gay photographer. Did you have overlapping days with some of your, and how did that come together? How awesome was that?
That was cool and funny. Yeah. I didn't look at the part when I told them that I would do it, because they said it was a big Shield reunion. So I thought, well, anything for Sean, of course. Yeah, I was nervous. It actually came out. It worked, but I was nervous doing it, because I thought, well, okay, am I going to be believable? You know, are people going to buy this? But it, 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 got the script, I read all the other characters, and I'm like, oh, man, he probably wants me for that guy. I'm like, no, it's probably that guy. This, oh, look at that. This is a great role. And I called halfway through, and I'm like, which role am I? Am I this guy or that guy? They go, no, you're this guy called so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, I haven't got there yet, you know? So I turn like 2 pages, and there's that scene, and I'm like, is this a joke? I go, you know. But I did it, and it was fun, and I had the time, so it was cool.
We're talking with Kenny Johnson. I'm always curious to know, anyone who works in a creative field, whether they're a writer, an actor, musician, if there was something in particular, a moment for you where you sort of realized, like, this is what I want to do with my life. This is what I want to pursue. Whether it was somebody you saw acting on stage or a film or a television program you saw and you said, that's what I want to do. That's the job for me.
You know, I mean, when I was in college, I definitely, you know, played around with the idea, but I was fairly introverted and I didn't think I could ever put myself out there like that. You know, but I used to watch old James Dean, Montgomery Clift movies, you know, Marlon Brando, and I totally loved the old movies. And, I think the time that it actually happened for me was a friend of mine who used to be Stallone's friend, wrote a movie. And it was like a student film when he was in college. So I was like a few years older than him. It was when I first moved out here, and he just wrote this film and wrote me as his best friend in the film, and kind of brought it to me and said, "Look, I wrote this film. I'm going to put it in the festival. I want you to play this part together, the guy." And so that's kind of like, I didn't want to do it at the beginning because I said I don't know anything about this, but he talked me into it, and that was my first experience actually doing anything on film, and I kind of fell in love with it at that moment. I just had this like, I don't know, this enlightened moment that just kind of shot through me, and I didn't know what it was, but it kind of let me know that this was where I was supposed to go. So,
in addition to this season of Sons of Anarchy, what's on the horizon for you? What else can we expect from you in the immediate future?
I just finished a film called Few Options with this guy George Pappy Jr. wrote and directed it. It was his first feature, and Michael Sheen is in it, and Rainn Wilson, Brad Dourif, David Marciano from The Shield, Laura San Giacomo, and Dayton Talley, actually, who's also on Sons of Anarchy. And it's an interesting story about a guy. I play a guy who's been in prison 23 years, and it's basically the first 8 days that happens when he first gets out of prison. And a bunch of crazy stuff happens, but that's kind of what the film's based on.
Sons of Anarchy airs Tuesdays on FX, and you can find out more about it at fxnetworks.com. Mr. Kenny Johnson, thank you for spending some time with us and for doing such great work, one project after another, and it sounds like there are more great things on the horizon. So best of continued success in life, art, and all things, my friend.
Thank you very much, man. It's a pleasure being on, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Thank you for joining us. It is Tuesday, December 7th, 2010, and I am here sans Dawn Taylor, who is at the hospital. She's at the emergency room right now. And by the way, you can be following her adventures by going to Facebook and looking for Dawn Taylor, DawnTaylor, and so she's there tweeting and Facebooking hither and yon. So there's updates aplenty from Dawn, who is at the hospital with her husband Patrick, who has taken on apparently a decidedly unpleasant hue. I guess he was in somebody, we've gotten several people who have asked if it was the same thing that he had earlier, if it was like the same ailment that was sort of plaguing him before, and I'm not even really sure. I know that he had, had the whole flu-like symptoms and whatever, and now I'm just thinking, you know, we're all going to end up in a CDC building setting the air on fire, but, and I don't know, he had had sort of a lingering cold and whatever, and had just been sort of just feeling a general malaise. But apparently he went into work today, and they took one look at him, and they said, "Dude, you got to go home. You look like an Easter egg." He'd turned like this really bad shade of he looked like a baby chick, apparently. So he is at the hospital right now, and we will keep you updated on on his status. The Rick Emerson Show, sort of an ad hoc clip show edition, continues here in just a moment. We'll have another installment of the greatest songs ever made and so forth. Don't forget, next week, next Monday the 13th, I will actually be traveling. I'll be coming back from Utah. So that's the bad news, is that I'll be coming back from Utah. Now, the good news, though, is that because I'm going to Utah next, well, this coming weekend, I'll be back Monday, the good news there is that I'm not going to be leaving for the rest of the year. So we're going to be here all the way through the end of the year. We're going to be here on Christmas Eve. We're going to be here on New Year's Eve as well. I am going to be in town all the way through the end of the year, with the exception of next Monday, the 13th. So we do have a special Christmas Eve episode of the program that's coming up. So we've got you know, all kinds of things on the horizon, and we'll talk more about this as we get toward the end of the year. But you know, just as we do end the first calendar year of doing this version of the show and this iteration of the program, and as I open the window here and look out over the you know, the mist enshrouded, sleet soaked streets of Portland. You know, not to get all maudlin about it, because it's just, you know, because it's only December 7th. It's not like we're anywhere near Christmas. But, you know, I will say that it is really great to be here doing, to be doing a version of the show that is, you know, independent, and that is not subject to the whims and changes and vagaries of the programming industry and of consultants and of media shakeups and format changes and corporate consolidation and so forth. And, you know, companies got to do what companies got to do. You know, but for us, it's important that we stay here and that we, you know, give people the show that, you know, the kind of show that they want, the kind of show that they have come to expect from us. And it wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for you guys. And if it wasn't for, you know, if it wasn't for you being out there and always believing in what we do, and frankly, it wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for our business partners as well, you know, and Castalia Language Center is one of those places, and you'll hear a bit more about them later on in the program, but you can find out more by going to PortlandSpanish.com, PortlandSpanish.com, Spanish language classes for adults in smallish class sizes, 8 people is the maximum there, and, you know, whatever, however much or little you speak right now of Spanish, they're going to be able to teach you in a way that is going to stick with you, and you're not going to be, you know, Eric Snyder said this last hour in Legion of News, you know, that he learned it in school, but he realized he didn't really learn it in school, and he didn't retain it, and, you know, that's just, especially if you're paying, you go to college and you learn language there and you come out and you don't remember any of it, and you're, you know, and that's the thing where you're paying for it. And if you're paying for it, you want to make sure that you retain it. You want to make sure that you're getting what you pay for, and then it's a permanent change to your language abilities, that your lexicon remains, you know, that you get the language and it stays with you, so you're able to use it conversationally anywhere you go. So you can find out more by going to Castalia Language Center. That is Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. They help to make this very fine radio program possible. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Show. You can email anytime, of course, at rick@rickemerson.com. It is rick@rickemerson.com. You are listening to sort of an ad hoc best of show, and we've had somebody request this. This is listener Rob. Rob has asked us to revisit this slice of musical observation that happened some time ago right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. The film critic Roger Ebert once said that a movie isn't about what it's about. It's about how it's about it. In other words, the subject matter and story are important, but the delivery, the method, the technique, that's what makes or breaks the final product. So it is with music. Often we find that the most powerful songs, the most moving songs, are those whose meanings probably elude us. I mean, what is Smells Like Teen Spirit really about anyway? Probably nothing, at least nothing concrete or finite. It all comes down to tone. It all comes down to feeling. And those are the elements that can make a song magic. Released in 1993, today's song was track 3 of the album by a band whom few have ever heard of. The song and the associated album fare a little better. The album is, in fact, out of print, though it can be purchased digitally. Things are familiar and haunting right out of the gate, as a guitar line which is equal parts 1970s and 1990s pop sets the stage for a lush exploration of, well, something, since the meaning of the song's lyrics isn't altogether clear. The hushed, layered delivery, sometimes not so much singing as breathing, seems to be about a lost love, someone who left or was left by the song's protagonist. in a production style associated with so-called dream pop, commonly associated with bands like the Dream Academy. The song twists and turns, sounding as though it's been performed in a chill-laden gloom of an autumn dusk. A low, moaning reverie persists throughout the song, and the vocals recall a set of years gone by. And though interpretations of the song vary wildly, it does have the unmistakable sound of someone looking through the prism of the past. The song's author, who is also the band's guitarist, has been very circumspect about the track's meaning or significance. But that, of course, is part of why the magic remains. It allows us to put ourselves and our own lives onto a dark, drifting, dreamy canvas that is at once beautiful and achingly sad. From their album Ring, this is one of the greatest songs ever made. This is the Connells and 74-75 on the Emerson News Network.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program here on the Emerson News Network. That was like a triple reference there, by the way. Have you gotten to, how many episodes into The Wire are you? Presuming you're still watching The Wire.
I'm still
assuming the whole thing wasn't a fabrication
five,
to begin with. All right,
five,
so you're like
five or six episodes. I got sidetracked by Sons of Anarchy. I can only watch much TV.
No, it's fine. You know, no, it's okay. And I suppose at least you weren't sidetracked by like Jersey Shore or something. You know, I'm sorry. I just this whole Ace of Cakes marathon, and I'm not able to watch The Wire right now. I'm sorry.
The new episode of the new season of America's Next Top Model started, and I couldn't keep up with The Wire.
Don't knock America's Next Top Model. Look, I didn't make those girls cry for no reason. I wonder if I've actually missed the cycle of America's Next Top Model where I did some of that, you know, because I was at one of those free screenings they did.
No, you missed it.
Oh, damn.
That was like two ago.
Because I wonder if there was, did anybody from Portland make it on? Do you watch that show?
No.
Okay. I'll have to check with, I think Sarah watches it. I have to, she comes in today. Because I'll have to see because there was talk. There was just sort of some low-grade whisperings that there was somebody from Portland who was going to make it on to, I think, Cycle 14 or whatever. Because they don't call them seasons anymore, but the Cycle 14 of that show.
That's because it's on like three different times a year or something.
So
they do that with Survivor, too,
and
I think.
South Park.
Because Survivor will come in and be like, it's series 20 of Survivor. I'm like, okay, how can it be season 20 of Survivor? And I've never seen a single one.
I think South Park has been on for 13 years, which makes me feel freaking old, by the way. I think South Park has been on for 13 years, but I believe that it's like season 17 or 18 or something, which is even more confusing because that's like, that didn't make any sense because it's not like they're doing two a year. Like 18 seasons in like 16 years, then it's like I just don't even know what to do. That's like how the Mad Magazine had this very carefully constructed system that Bill Gaines came up with where, and you may have noticed this when you were a child if you subscribed to Mad Magazine, he had this very carefully constructed system because it dated back to the comic book era when retailers would take any comic book that was the slightest bit dated off the shelves because they always wanted to look like they had the new merch. So he had this whole algorithm worked out to where Nomad Magazine was ever actually on sale during the month that was on the cover. So it was like the cover always said like April when it was like January. So it's just the whole thing became, and it's like that's the way with South Park. I can never tell when anything's actually on. It didn't really matter. The point is that you may have already seen this at some point in The Wire, but you'll see it later. It's not a spoiler because it happens several times. But there's this whole thing where when a cop has died, they do the traditional laying out of the body at Kavanaugh's, which is an Irish pub nearby. And that Pogues song, Body of an American, is they do, and everybody does, they all have a round and everybody sings the Pogues song before the guy's taken to the funeral home. So that's like a little triple thing there because you had the bar and the funeral home. And the Wire thing going on.
Did you catch my weird itchy thing?
Just now when I was scratching my shoulder.
Yeah,
I got over
twitching and
over here on my left hand side. I got like it feels like a mosquito bite or something, or perhaps it's those bed bugs that are apparently invading Portland.
You know, it works for that. Your pen, scratch yourself with.
Yeah, but then I'm just. Don't take this the wrong way, but then I'm just you. I mean, more importantly, I'll see. Now I'm itching everywhere. Thanks a lot, Don.
You were already twisting around and scratching
yourself
before I said anything.
Yeah, but just in one place, and now I'm just itching everywhere.
Because of the
bed makes me itchy. Because here's the thing. If I start scratching myself with implements, then it's not so much I am you. It's that I'm a friend. I won't mention him by name. But there's a friend of mine who, he has this whole, like, it's nobody that is known to the show now. He's a friend of mine, but I think he listens, so I don't want to call him out in front of anybody. But I worked with him years ago, and it's a thing before I really knew what the term obsessive compulsive was. Like, I just thought, like, well, yeah, that guy has nervous tics. That's what we used to say when I was growing up. He had nervous tics. He had this whole thing for cleaning out his ears, though. He was like a constant, like, you know, guys were always like kind of scratching the inside of their ears. But it's not even gross, it's just weird. His whole thing for constantly cleaning out the inside of his ears was not even to use, like, a Q-tip, you know, or to just be, like, scratching with his hand or whatever. His whole thing was he would clean out the inside of his ears with, like, things and ballpoint pens, chief among them. He would sometimes take the ballpoint pen apart and take out the little ink tube, the little, you know, like, ink cylinder inside, the straw, and actually be cleaning his ears with that. Pencils or, like, the end of, like, you know, like the handle on a spoon or something just inside his ear. I swear to God, I actually, and I didn't mention it because I'm like, did you ever announce that you ever notice that Tom cleans the inside of his ears a lot, and he does it with, like, things, like pens and pencils? I never mentioned it until, I swear to God, we were at a radio station one time, and I saw him scraping, like, it was just the very, very inside. Like, not, it wasn't deep inside. It was just, like, you know, the outer part of the inside.
Mm-hmm.
When I swear to God, I'm scraping at the inside of his ear with an X-Acto knife. And I said, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, cleaning my ear, it's itchy. And I was just like, put the X-Acto, find something, get a Q-tip for the love of, that's one of those things where a guy's going to open a door at the wrong moment, and it's like X-Acto knife through your brain. Anyway, if you get an X-Acto knife through your brain, it may not make a mess, but you won't be able to clean your own carpet, that's for sure.
No.
So you want to have this number written down, 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That's how you contact Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner of The Cleaning Solution. They are a Portland business. When I say Portland business, I don't just mean they're based here. I don't just mean that they operate here, although they are and they do. It means they keep their money here as well, and you know, not just because they advertise. Michael Beatty actually buys his supplies, his accessories, all of his equipment, all of that stuff whenever possible. You know, he buys that from other Portland businesses. So it is it's friends helping friends and neighbors helping neighbors. And more importantly, it facilitates your laziness as an American, because you need no longer clean, you know, anything. I mean, except yourself, and there's probably people who do that for you, too.
And your ears.
And your ears.
Clean your own ears.
Yeah, he's not going to touch your ears. He's not going to F with that. But upholstery, stone, tile, marble, hardwood entryway, carpet, especially anything, linoleum. I mean, like, if you're so damn lazy you can't even clean your own linoleum, which I certainly understand, he'll do that for you, 971-533-3211. He'll do it at your place of business as well as at your home. So whether it's a residential or office, he will take care of that for you. So just write down this number in case you need it, or if you need to get your carpet clean, keep it looking as good as the day you bought it, 971-533-3211. That is Mr. Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution, a proud sponsor of The Rick Emerson Show. Please tell him you heard it here on the Emerson News Network. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's, what is today, Tuesday still?
It is.
All right. Still to come, Hick Watch, Monkey Watch coming up, and the top five. So I'm printing this out right now. See if it's actually, here we go. I got it in my hand. I got the top five. The top five sleaziest songs ever to achieve mainstream, or to receive, anyway, mainstream radio airplay. These are the top five sleaziest songs that were played. And this is, you know, this is something where it was just sort of, you know, played once. These are things that songs the whole family knows, Tom. So that's coming up later on. The top five, that'll be later on this hour. And I believe this is actually yours right there.
Oh, that's where that went.
All right, it's 503-505-6964. What headlines can we expect as the program progresses today, Don Taylor?
Well, we have a rider who was struck and killed by an Amtrak train, and a prison power failure, which canceled visits to the prison. And, of course, in the text box, we have a request. Damn, we have had a lot of breaks today. Can we get back to the butt sex?
Well, okay, but only because you really asked for it in the most strident of tones. It's funny, because I was just about to say, back to porn. So you took all the clown porn home. Can I ask you this? Did you, when you were watching the clown porn, okay, first of all, you probably didn't watch that first scene again, because you'd already been subjected to that here on Friday.
Right.
Because we never saw the completion of that scene, but I'm assuming it's sort of...
No, and I realized that I didn't... Yeah, I realized later, as something of a completist, I didn't go back and... Watch how it ended.
Yeah. How it all came out.
Yeah.
But here's the only reason.
I'm sure I can guess.
Yeah, but see, here's the only thing. Is that I hate to be... look, I don't want to traffic in crudity or anything, because that's not what Rick Emerson does. This is a clean program.
You could have expected one thing, and it turned out it was just confetti.
I was going to say silly string. See, that's my thing. Because, okay, see, I'm glad we're on the same page there. Because don't you wonder in, like, some small way if, like, if it was sort of a... And then it's just like a pink silly string kind of shooting out? I'm not trying to be horrible. I'm just... I honestly wondered. It was a thing that I really was curious about.
See, now I feel like I have to watch it just to find out.
I think you might be giving them credit for more cleverness than they're.
Well, speaking of credit for more cleverness, so you were talking about the fact that there was a scene that took in this clown porn film that took and by the way, we are the only broadcast like in the world today talking about clown porn like this much. I don't think that there's any other show on the air today that's talking about clown porn.
Dissecting the merits of the clown porn.
I mean, really, it's that is what sets us apart. Is that we were exploring the many facets of this particular brand of erotica. First of all, as a side note, don't you wonder who the audience for this is? Because it can't be clown. It can't be people afraid of clowns. It doesn't seem like there's that many people with a clown fetish. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's women because it's like humping a clown isn't like humping a guy in a uniform. Like you were talking about, were you saying you were here the other day when the UPS guy came by?
Yeah.
Speaking of which, there's that big box of stuff from Think Geek. We should open that later on.
We should.
But you were like, the UPS guy came by and we were noting that, we should put up a sign so they don't come into the studio during the show. And you said, not that I mind talking to a guy in a hot UPS uniform or whatever. And that's a whole separate issue because I'm not saying it's not real or whatever. I mean, it clearly is. I'm saying that as a man, like, I don't get the whole thing with guys in uniform. Like, which is fine. It's not like everything. I have to get everything. I mean, I understand sort of, but I'm saying I can't identify with that. Like,
I can explain it only for myself, if you want to know.
Yes.
Which could be, we might be.
I'm assuming it's a daddy thing, as it always is.
My dad was a fireman.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was a cop or something.
He was a cop before I was born.
I see.
But by the time I was born, he was a fireman.
This makes much sense.
Yeah. And so I spent a lot of my formative childhood days being around a large man wearing like a uniform with a shiny leather belt and black shoes and a badge, you know. And what can I say?
Well, I suppose this is probably the time when I should point out that my mother, my sister, and my wife are all nurses. So you can draw your own conclusions there, I suppose.
But that also explains the thing, because I have this fear and this real problem with authority figures and with cops. And so whenever I'm around an actual police officer, I am such a jangle of like conflicting things going on, because it's like I fear and despise like policemen just on a real, because I grew up in the Los Angeles area.
Right.
So there's this LAPD thing.
Sure.
I have this response.
Don't beat me.
Yeah. Please don't kill me.
Yeah.
And then I have the daddy thing. And then there's like, there's some kind of weird Freudian sexy thing going on that goes there too. And I get near them and it's like my brain is just going, uniform, badge, smell of sweaty man and leather, cop, fear, anger, and it's like everything just starts to shortwave, and it's a horrible. So I live in constant fear of being pulled over by a cop because my brain just short circuits.
Because then, because if you get pulled over by a cop, you know the funny thing about that is that if that ever does happen, you really are going to turn into. And I don't know why of all days I've decided to not have the porn music handy. This is like my instant karma here for not having this, because I was just, it is going to be that thing where just, officer, is there any way that I can convince you not to give me a ticket? Is there anything I can do to perhaps, and then it'll just, I don't have it now. I was reaching for the whole wah, wah, wah bed that I don't have. But it's that whole thing. When is the last time you got pulled over?
Oh, it's years.
You probably drive years very carefully just because you don't want to be pulled over.
Yes. Yes,
that would
be
my guess. The same reason that I do. That's why I was so. It was so unlike me, at least as an adult, to not have my tags renewed. To have expired tags, because I do everything I can not to have the man pull me over, because it's just the worst experience on earth, and I'm always afraid they're going to find some outstanding ticket, or they're going to throw me in the clink, or whatever. Somebody in the text box says, when is Dawn's birthday? I feel the need to send a policeman stripper to the studio. Please don't.
That's like a fake clown.
I was just going to say.
It's not the same thing.
Without even asking you, I knew that you would not find a cop stripper to be the same thing, because it's fake, because you know in your mind that he's not really going to beat you.
Did I tell you that there was a lady cop stripper at Thanksgiving last year, my husband's family Thanksgiving?
Why? Why would that be the case ever, anywhere, at anyone's Thanksgiving?
Because it was his, he has an uncle who is like only about 5 years older than him because of one of those, weird familial breeding things.
Oh, trust me, I know.
And the uncle is a police officer. He's like a training officer and a detective and all kinds of fancy things in Washington State. And it was his birthday. And so somebody got the bright idea. Apparently somebody who one of the relatives works with a woman who has a side business doing like strippergram things. And one of her things is police officer. So she showed up. It was his birthday, but it was also everyone was gathered for Thanksgiving.
And so was she just like coming straight from work or something?
I don't know exactly how they made the arrangement. We were having Thanksgiving, and it was after dinner, and there was a knock at the door, and this incredibly busty woman in this cheesy-looking faux policeman's uniform shows up and says, I've had some complaints that there's a lot of noise going on here. And she came in, and they started playing this boom waka chicka music, and I was like going, this is like the strangest Thanksgiving I've ever experienced.
Okay, see, so I just, it's like a full-on Arrested Development thing. It's like the hot cops have suddenly have arrived. When you were describing it, I thought, so she is she's the girlfriend of...
She's like a co-worker of someone who's one of the relatives.
Who was at dinner. See, I thought you meant that... I was sort of thinking that she was, like, there as a date or something.
No. No, they actually... They found out she does this on the side, and they actually had her come by as a favor.
That's so much worse. See, I was thinking it was sort of a...
Swinging handcuffs around and stuff.
No. See, I was thinking that, like, you're sitting around the dinner table, and it's like you and the aunt, the uncle, and grandpa, and mom, and whoever, and, like, Fred, and Fred's girlfriend... She sidelines as a stripper. Don't mind her. She just came from a gig, and she's sitting there with like her handcuffs and her baton, going, "Sorry, I had to stop by a football watching party earlier on. Forgive my outfit." But no, they actually like had her come and do her thing of like, "I've been told there's too much, legally too much fun happening. There's a criminal amount of joy happening in this household. Happy Thanksgiving. Look at my boobs," or whatever. Yeah. And did she actually come in and start stripping?
She danced around, and then they did this whole thing where it. I think they were going to like put handcuffs on him, and he would not allow that to happen because, again, he's an actual police officer. But it was more.
You should film
more
your family gatherings.
This is even my family. My family is like just straight out trashy. My father's family is like semi trashy but fun loving. So it's kind of
that's so bizarre.
It was bizarre, and I was just. You know, sitting there going, and I was worried about being on my best behavior.
Seriously. Well, you're no longer the creepy, crazy one. I mean, like, ever. You know, it's like the bar is just set so unimaginably high. Well, it's like I have that. There's that weird age thing in my family, too, where I have a niece who is, you know, how do I put this? My younger brother, James. He actually has nieces and nephews who are, like, way older than he is because it's like Mike is this whole spread-out thing in my family. So I understand that weirdness. The stripper weirdness, like, it takes the whole family thing to a whole different... what's weird about this is just this morning, for reasons that I can't really quantify, do you ever just, like, be sitting there and you're brushing your teeth or something, and you start thinking about something, like, for no reason. There's no reason that a particular memory pops into your head that you can think of. It's just there. So you know what I was thinking of is when I was in high school... A friend of mine graduated a couple years before I did. I think it was a sophomore, and he was a senior, maybe. And, he must have been. He was graduating, but I think I must have been a sophomore. But I went to his graduation party, and I'm like 15, 16. And this is like his graduation party, like, at his house. And it's his mom and his dad and, like, I think his grandparents and, like, friends from the neighborhood who knew him when he was just – when he was pink and hairless or whatever. And then his dad got him a stripper. And it was like the stripper shows up and it's like, I'm 15 and I've never been in a place where there's a stripper. Everybody else must have seen it coming a mile away because some chick shows up with like a tight shirt on and like carrying a boombox and sets it down. And there's a whole like, oh, what could this be? Oh, son, Todd, you better get in here.
That is creepy.
And I remember just thinking like, I don't know what's going on. What's happening? And then the next thing, as you said, there's like the inch, 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 inch on the jukebox. And, you know, and then suddenly she's like shaking her cakes at everybody. And meanwhile, there's like an old guy like eating some pie across the way. And congratulations on your graduation. Do you have any Maalox? And meanwhile, there's a woman like shaking her melons at you. And, you know, and it's like, and I'm 15 and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I have to leave, or whatever. And it was just all very confusing. The stripper in the home is just like it's a weird, strange way to make a living, and it's embarrassing for everyone involved.
The stripper thing also came at the end of an evening where, while we were having Thanksgiving dinner, something came up about fears, things that you're afraid of. I think, honest to God, I think clowns came up, and I mentioned that I had the clown phobia, and the cop uncle guy said that he was deathly afraid of snakes, and then he told this story about how he and his partner had to go out into the desert, and they were doing something in the desert and looking for something. And I don't even remember the entire story, but it had something to do with a snake in a hole, and the snake started to come out of the hole, and he just was so freaked out by it, he unloaded his service revolver into the hole and blew the living hell out of the snake, and then had to go back to the station covered with bits of snake guts.
That's
like all over
awesome.
Himself. And I'm just sitting, and I was sitting there at that point, and I looked up after that story and I said, this is the best Thanksgiving ever.
I wasn't even there, and I don't disagree.
And then later, stripper.
That's awesome. My question about porn is real is more basic. You were talking about the clown porn. How there's a sequence that ostensibly takes place in a basement because there's a ladder. But you said that it was like the ladder was just leaning against the walls. They were like faking the basement thing, and not even like a flight of artistic fancy. It was just like they were too cheap to get a basement.
Yeah, guy would climb down, then they'd like cut to somebody's facial reaction. Then another guy climbing down, then shoot to the girl, then other guy climbing down, you know, trying to pretend they were all coming down the ladder.
Here's the thing that I think about all the time, actually. I wonder about in porn. This is maybe what makes me a dull human being in some way. I always wonder, like, whose house they're at. Especially if it's a really nice house. I'm not talking about, like, there's a lot of, like, especially in the internet now, there's a lot of that so-called It's like a pro-am porn. And pro-am, as I've come to find out, that is one of those terms. It's where it's not like Vivid Video making it. Like, it's not some billion-dollar company that's on the strip somewhere. But it's also not like a sex tape as such, where it's like two people are humping it out and then they break up and the guy in a fit of pique just says, well, screw you. I'll upload that to the Intertron so everyone can see it. But it's where, like, it is, you know, it's like a pay site, or it's, I guess, porn that is done for commercial purpose. People are making money on it, but they're not like a business. It's just like some guys, you know, who like form like a little company, not unlike our company, Dawn, but with less talking and more humping. For example, now here's the thing I did not know, and this probably won't mean anything to you, but some of you gentlemen out there who perhaps have consumed adult material in the last 10 years or so online, there was, I guess, until recently, we missed the window for this. There's apparently a real famous site like this. Like, it's where just like a couple who started like filming themselves humping, sticking it on Usenet, as we used to call it back in the day, and apparently got a big reaction. And they thought, I wonder if people would pay to see my wife humping me. Let's find out. And they started doing it, and people started paying. And it was some chick. I don't even know if I ever knew her real name, but it's called Wifey's World. Is the name of this site, and it's like some big boobed woman who she and her husband made all these hump videos, and they were just sticking them on like message boards like 15 years ago, and they got this huge response, and then they just started selling it. There's a whole thing in Wired about this. They started selling them, and then they put up a website, and it was like one of the first really really profitable amateur porn sites that was done for profit. In other words, it wasn't done by a company. And they lived in Oregon City. And I guess eventually they moved. And the reason they moved is because their neighbors found out who they were. Because somebody at a supermarket somewhere said, like, hey, I know you. I just saw you humping a guy on the... And then, like, word spread through the tiny little, you know, the little Peyton place that is Oregon City.
They don't have a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, and then like, one of the neighbors, apparently, undoubtedly some blue-haired woman who's unable to satisfy her husband, complained about it, called, like, not the cops, but called, like, whoever it is you call about that, saying that, like, they weren't zoned to have a business, much less an adult business in their neighborhood. And here this chick is, like, humping her husband, and they're making, like... And they were making like $500,000 a year. I mean, it was
and
like
still
this...
living in Oregon City.
No, they moved. They were like, that's the thing is like the neighbors, some tight ass woman complained and said like, our neighbors are making porn films and they're doing it for profit. And this isn't a business district and they're, you know, it's an adult business. And so there was all this like heat from the community. And so they're like, you know what? F it. We're making $500,000 a year. We're moving to Phoenix. And so they moved to Arizona. Anyway, so that's a whole fascinating category to me, is just the people who are just making films on their own and then making money on it.
Well, like I saw the one movie I believe I told you about. It was called The Effing Elvises.
Yeah.
And and that was and one of the guys who, and it was just, you know, a woman having sex with like five guys in these cheesy Elvis wigs. But one of the guys, the producer, the producer of the film, was one of the Elvises.
Yeah.
And he seemed to be having such a good time. And I just figured, I bet the only reason he made this movie was so that he could actually have sex with a porn actress.
Totally.
And be in a movie.
Yeah.
Because he seemed to really be enjoying
himself. Well, you got to imagine the overhead for making that, for being like a pro-am porn company, where it's just like, where you're not pretending that it's homemade as such. Like, you're not trying to pass it off as like, you know, some leaked video that made its way to the internet. But it's also not like glossy with a lot of props and whatever. It's basically
like the Elvis video. It was just in one large living room with like a sectional sofa. That was the entire set, with some living room with a sectional sofa.
And like, you'll see a lot of the a lot of this. Here's the other. And let me just tell you, of all of the regrets that I have in my life, can I just tell you one of my deepest, most profound regrets?
Sure, Rick. I mean, it's only you and me.
Of all of the things I rue and lament, I can't believe there are times when I do things and they are so unbelievably friggin' stupid.
You were one of the guys in the Elvis video, weren't you?
Yes. No. But it's close to that, actually. There are times I'm just so goddamn stupid that I cannot believe. It's like, even by my standards, I do things that are so colossally dumb. We used to have a listener who ran a porn site, and it was the so-called gonzo porn. And gonzo porn is this. What that basically means is the gonzo porn is where, just as in gonzo journalism, where the journalist is part of the action, inserts himself into the story. In gonzo porn, it's where the guy behind the camera is saying like, hey, so we're here with Roxanne. And then he swings the camera on. Roxanne, say hello to everybody. And Roxanne waves at the camera. And it is like, again, it's not that they're not going to pass it off as like homemade, but it's not like high budget. It is where everybody is clear about what's going on. And what's going on is, hey, we've paid this girl $2,000 and she's going to hump me here on camera so you guys can watch. Who's into that? And then Roxanne giggles. And then the camera guy either holds the camera or like he has a buddy hold the camera while he like gets it on, and then they upload
it. Like there's that whole series for years with the, I can't even remember the guy's name, but the guy who does that, and he drives around places and finds,
on the prowl.
Ostensibly finds girls to do it, but you know.
Yeah, or on, well, I guess On the Prowl was the thing they do in Boogie Nights where he's like the lookout or whatever.
It's something like that,
But gonzo porn is very, and like they're not pretending that she's a girl off the street and that it's like whatever. I mean, or in other words, they're not pretending that she's not, that it's not like a gig for her. They're like, hey, you know, this girl's going to hump us and we're going to film it and everybody's going to have a great time. It's a win-win. Let's go. So we had a listener who, along with another guy, had this gonzo porn company. And they were in, I don't think they were here. I think they were like maybe in Northern California. But it's like, it was him and a buddy, and they had this little LLC they formed, this company. And they would find these chicks. They put up these ads, like do adult modeling. And girls would respond and they'd say, look, the adult modeling, it's going to have, there's a sexual element. So yes or no. And if she said no, she left. And if she said yes, they'd negotiate if she said yes. And they would pay some girl like $1,500 or whatever to get it on with some, you know, the guy. And I guess they took turns or something. It's like, you film one, I'll film one. And so one guy would film and the other guy would just get his basket weaved by this girl. And then they would upload, and he was a listener, and so he's like, hey, Rick, I thought you'd like to know my friend and I started this porn company. And I'm like, that's awesome. And so we'd had him on like once a week to tell us, because it was just fascinating. And I cannot believe that I didn't keep these, but he was like, hey, I'll send you like, you know, login and a password. So he sent us like, you know, like a free, you know, like a membership or whatever. And Sarah was just grossed out by the whole thing, especially when, and this is where the retard me thing comes in. And if you were listening at the time, this is maybe 10 years ago, if you were listening, you know that I'm telling the truth. I'm not making this up. He started having the girls like say things like, you know, like about the show. He's like, say Rick Emerson. And the girl who's like getting stuffed is going like, Rick Emerson, you know, while the guy. At one point, I just said like real like jokingly, I'm like, yeah, have one of them say Sarah's name. And so like, I'll be goddamned if like the next chick on the porn site didn't like moan Sarah while she was like getting, you know, nailed.
Oh, God.
Which Sarah, I thought Sarah was going to vomit when we played the audio from that on the air. It was a pre-Janet Jackson time when you could do that sort of thing in radio. Mm. And like an idiot, I just like never kept any of it.
That's too bad.
How many times that you just see? How many times in your life do you have a porn actress, but a chicken like an actual porn film, which is being produced and made for profit and is on the internet, like saying Rick Emerson? Like never.
Never.
And I've totally lost track of the guy now. That's the thing, is like if the site is gone, I don't know where the guy is. It's not like I spent a lot of time looking for it or whatever, but it's like it just, I went there one day and it was just gone. So I just, of all of the regrets, the fact that I did not keep porn material where, like, the porn actress is actually talking, like, about this radio show. Like, I don't know what was going on in my head. But my thing with the basement porn is, like, it's not even, like,
when they're in like some sleazy motel room, or like these guys were at like some studio apartment, when they're at a really nice house in a porn film, I think like, whose house is that? And is it a sort of like, hey, you let us use your house and like, you know, we'll let you like, you know, get one off with a girl like later on, you know, or what? I always wonder how that works, or if it's more structured than that. Like if there is a sort of lawyer and a realtor, and they do arrange some business deal that is all quantified and it's all legal for rental of the house. That is a thing that fascinates me, is the side logistics of that whole business.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. Well, in any event.
That is interesting.
So your question, though, about, and I finally found it, too late do I find the porn music. But having watched the clown porn, was it in the one we watched where the clown, the alternate entry sex.
I believe there was some of that in there. I think that's my thing, is I think that...
Are you saying it's like in your opinion, it's a recent phenomenon in general, like in the sense that it's a thing that guys, like, apparently, like, want to do, or is it a recent phenomenon just for it to be on film, the
backdoor? I think over the course of... Because my husband, again, having... he never throws anything away, having...
Does he keep all his porn?
Not anymore, but when I married him, he had...
Was he told that was not acceptable?
No, he just decided at some point that he didn't really need it anymore.
Well, it was on VHS probably, too, so I mean...
Yes, a lot of it was.
Why, hello, you're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. I could sense a great disturbance in the force as Cheryl began to grit her teeth more strongly as the porn conversation continued. All right, there you go. That was a little slice of yesteryear. So that was another request we had. And I'm sorry, I apologize, sir. I have closed the text box in which you requested it. So your name eludes me. But that was somebody who wanted to hear the recap of the clown porn, which is something that Don... And I think that was the day that later on... I could be wrong about this. I think that was the same show where later on everybody brought like a whole series of Dorito-type snack foods. But it was like the Doritos that tasted like a cheeseburger, and they were like Doritos that tasted like tacos, and Doritos that tasted like, I don't know, like nine-layer lasagna or something. It was all very... Everybody wanted to hurl by the end of the show. My memory is sort of foggy at this point. It is Tuesday, December 7th, 2010. Thank you for coming by. It's the Rick Emerson radio program live from the studios of the Emerson News Network. Today we're doing a little bit of ad hoc clip showing because Dawn is not present today. She is in the at the doctor's office with her husband, Patrick, who is taken ill. He looks bad, apparently. It's just sort of a retaining fluid and bloating and glassy-eyed and... You know, talking about everybody's brains. So we will keep you informed as to his recovery. Presumably, Don will be back tomorrow for Legion of News and for another installment of the Rick Emerson radio program. If not, we will be here and we'll do a live show tomorrow regardless, one way or the other. Don't forget a little bit of business that next Monday, the 13th, I will, in fact, be gone. I'll be traveling next Monday, the 13th, and then I'll be back on Tuesday. Now, if I am able to do so, and there's no guarantee here, but if I'm able to do so, when I'm traveling, when I'm flying from Salt Lake City back to Portland, I will endeavor to call the show so that everyone can hear me being, certainly my rights and quite possibly the inside of my pants, sort of violated by security. So we'll see. In any event, so thank you to Eric D. Snyder. You can read him at film.com or Cinematical, and you can hear him at Cascadia.fm Fridays, 11 a.m., Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder. I want to thank Eric for filling in for Don Taylor during Legion of News. Thank you to everybody who was listening today, everybody who chimed in, had requests, everybody who was wanting to hear something in particular. Thanks to everybody for listening. It means a great deal. Be back again tomorrow live one way or t'other, as they say, and so forth. In the meantime, we're going to do a little brief musical interlude here, an encore of today's Legion of News episode with myself and Eric Snyder, followed by an encore of this somewhat live, somewhat clipped show, and et cetera. And don't forget... And you can hear this program day or night at the Rick Emerson live stream at rickemerson.com. It's also downloadable, and it's on iTunes as well. So thank you all for listening. It does mean a great deal. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things. At the news desk today, Mr. Eric D. Snyder in for Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. It is Tuesday, December 7th, 2010, and that is the frequency, Kenneth. Thank y'all for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow, Wednesday the 8th. Bye now.